It is a pleasure to introduce our next instructor here at Best Ideas 2018. Joining us from New York City, Emil Berra is the Chief Investment Officer of Advaya Investment Management, a boutique registered investment advisor offering investment management and consulting services. Emil brings more than a decade of professional experience catering to high net worth clients to the summit. Prior to founding Advaya in 2010, Emil served as Vice President and Senior Investment Research Analyst for Wells Fargo Wealth Management in San Francisco. Prior to that, Emil served as Relative Value Strategies Analyst for Sale Advisors, a Hong Kong-based fund of hedge funds. Additionally, Emil previously served as the sole investment analyst for a large family office based in New York City with capital allocations to private equity, venture capital, hedge funds, real estate, and opportunistic investments. I'd like to also please point out that Emil was a very value-add participant in Latticework 2017, so people might recognize his name in that context, and also a longtime member of MOI Global, and we're most grateful to work on your behalf. On behalf of the MOI Global community, a very, very warm welcome. Please proceed.
Thank you, Shai, and thanks for the introduction. I wanted to start with a few slides about my firm and our values, and also how we think about investing. I always like to start a discussion with our mission and values. These values have been the same since day one and are unlikely to ever change. Advaya's mission is to build wealth for our investment partners in a manner consistent with our values. Our values are integrity. Our reputation is everything. We act as your fiduciary at all times, and there are no exceptions. For us, trust is the basis of everything. Trust is especially important in tough investment environments, and we strive to be honest about our successes and our failures. Next is discipline. Risk management is instrumental for strong long-term returns. Our discipline carries over to client servicing. We're focused on risk-adjusted returns. We won't take risk when we don't expect to get paid for them. We are proactive and transparent with our clients, responding to their needs in a timely fashion. We also value humility. We do not know everything. We expect to be humbled by the market from time to time, and we will learn from these moments and become better investors. I think the key here is that we are committed to learning from our mistakes and not making the same mistake twice. Our portfolios evolve to reflect what we learn. We know what doesn't work for us. However, we don't always know what works for us. We also value your independence. We think for ourselves and own our successes and failures. As a private company, we value the flexibility to customize our services to best serve our clients. This permits us to work with people who understand our investment approach and whom we feel good about. And last, we value unity. Our interests are fully aligned with yours, and we invest our own capital in every investment. This slide gives insight into our investment philosophy, or how we generally think about investing. Warren Buffett once said, "Investing is simple, but not easy. Patience, discipline, and global perspective are required to build wealth through investing. We are contrarian investors by nature. The ability to maintain the conviction to grow an investment at a time when others are selling is key to long-term investment success. Volatility is a friend of long-term investors as it creates buy and sell opportunities. We believe that simple is generally better than complex, and we believe that making a minimal number of high conviction investment decisions is superior to diversification. For diversification, that investment performance should be measured over the long term, on an at least 5-year rolling annualized basis." This slide is a simplified explanation of our investment strategy. James Montier of GMO Investments recently wrote, "As tempting as it may be to be a man of action, it often makes more sense to act only at the extremes. But the discipline required to do nothing for long periods of time is not often seen." Our objective is to stay invested in the right basket of securities over the long term. we target a portfolio of 20 securities. We generally believe that equities are the best long-term investment. When other asset classes offer better risk-reward opportunities than equities, we may invest outside of equities. Our long time horizon permits us to take advantage of short-term volatility for the benefit of our clients. Given our time horizon, we tend to have a larger allocation to smaller companies than most money managers. We invest in derivatives such as equity options from time to time. And we also have portfolio restrictions in place to help manage risk. This slide illustrates our investment process. Benjamin Graham wrote, "The investor's chief problem, and even his worst enemy, is likely to be himself." We start with research. We read and explore to find new ideas. This includes being present and paying attention to what is going on in the world. Then there's investment analysis. Once we discover an idea that piques our interest, we take a closer look at it. Usually we reject the idea for one reason or another. However, from time to time, we find something that meets our investment criteria. If the price is right, we may add the position to the portfolio. If the price is high, we often add it to our watch list and patiently await Mr. Market's mood to become less ebullient. Then there's portfolio construction. We size positions based on riskiness and return potential. Both subjective and objective criteria are involved in making sizing decisions. And last, there's tactical trading. While we aim to keep our positions long-term, we occasionally trim and add to our positions as prices fluctuate. We also occasionally get more aggressive with high conviction positions through the use of long-term options at price extremes. That was an overview of how we think about managing money for our clients. While many investors have similar investment approaches, we believe that our values is what sets us apart. In our view, client relationships are more important than short-term investment performance, which by the nature of the market will fluctuate. That said, over the long term, we expect to build significant wealth for our investment partners. Now I will talk about our best idea, our current best idea. The company is XPO Logistics. XPO is one of the largest third-party logistics providers in the U.S. and Europe. XPO provides contract logistics and transportation services. In transport, the company's businesses include truck brokerage, less-than-truckload, last-mile logistics, intermodal and drayage, expedited, and global forwarding. The company has grown from $160 million in revenues in 2011 to over $15 billion today through acquisitions and market share gains. Before talking about XPO, I wanted to share some facts about the global logistics industry. In 2015, it was an $8.1 trillion industry and is expected to grow to $15.5 trillion by 2023. So logistics makes up 10% of global GDP. Logistics are growing more rapidly than GDP. On a global basis, logistics are expected to grow at a compounded annualized growth rate of 7.5% through 2023. Within logistics, there are at least four types of operators, as the graphic on the right illustrates. 1PL is a first-party logistics provider. 1PLs are both the firm sending cargo and the firm's receiving cargo. Think of Ford receiving auto parts from an OEM. 2PL is a second-party logistics provider. 2PLs are typically an asset-based carrier which owns the means of transportation, such as shipping companies that own ships or trucks. Think Maersk or FedEx. 3PL is a third-party logistics provider. 3PLs provide outsourced logistics services to companies for part or all of their supply chain management. This is where XPO excels. 4PL is a fourth-party logistics provider. 4PLs are a non-asset-based integrator who assembles the resources, capabilities, and technology of its own organization and other organizations, including 3PLs, to design, build, and run comprehensive supply chain solutions. XPO is involved in this space providing managed services to some customers. Think of Zara outsourcing its e-commerce inventory and shipping management. Within the US and Europe, 3PL and beyond is a $1 trillion addressable opportunity. At $15 billion in revenues, XPO only accounts for 1.5% of this opportunity. The market is growing rapidly, and XPO's share is growing even faster. The logistics industry is highly fragmented. There are many small private companies involved. The U.S. truck brokerage business, for example, is worth $50 billion a year and has more than 10,000 operators. But only 25 operators have revenue above $200 million. The logistics industry is inefficient. Leveraging a best-in-class platform to consolidate fragments could lead to excess returns. Scale, asset utilization, and rational pricing are key. Rational pricing requires better data and analytics. This requires good technology. Investing in technology is something that smaller industry players have overlooked. Given these facts, logistics is an industry ripe for consolidation. In comes Bradley Jacobs. Much of our investment thesis in XPO revolves around CEO Bradley Jacobs. It is important to get a sense of him to understand the XPO investment opportunity. Jacobs is relentless. He strives for perfection and surrounds himself with well-incentivized high performers. He is a serial entrepreneur that has grown multiple multi-billion dollar enterprises, which have rewarded him and his shareholders well. He is also a serial acquirer and has completed over 500 acquisitions in his career. Notably, he founded United Waste in 1989, to consolidate rural garbage collectors. He took the company public in 1992. After over 200 acquisitions, he sold United Waste to USA Waste Services in 1997. Between 92 and 97, United Waste stock had an annualized return of 55%. Within months of selling United Waste, Jacob started United Rentals with $54 million and six members of his United Waste management team to consolidate North American equipment rental companies. In June 1998, United Rentals acquired U.S. Rentals for $1.2 billion to create the largest equipment rental company in North America. Jacobs made over 250 acquisitions as CEO. In 2003, Jacob stepped down as CEO, but remained as executive chairman until 2007. According to Jacob, he researched over 300 industries to decide on which sector to consolidate next. In 2011, Jacob made a $150 million investment to acquire 71% of Express One Expedited Solutions. Express One Expedited Solutions was renamed XPO Logistics on September 3, 2011, with Jacobs taking the realm as CEO. About his investment, Jacobs said, quote, "I plan to build a multi-billion dollar transportation brokerage business over the next several years. Express One is an ideal platform with prominent positions in expedited services, freight brokerage, and freight forwarding. I'm excited about leading the company into its next phase of growth," unquote. It is clear that Jacobs is following the industry consolidation model that he successfully implemented at United Waste and United Rentals. Through a series of acquisitions financed by equity and debt raises, XPO grows from $160 million to $15 billion in annual revenues in 6 years. In September 2014, prominent long-term investment funds GIC, Ontario Teachers Pension, and PSP invested $700 million in equity. In June 2015, the same group, along with 12 institutional investors, invested another $1.26 billion into XPO. In August 2014, XPO tapped credit markets for the first time, raising $500 million in five-year senior notes. In subsequent years, XPO has successfully raised another $3.225 billion through credit markets at lower interest rates. The company has transitioned successfully from a purely non-asset-based business to a diversified third-party logistics provider. About one-third of the company's revenues are generated by its asset-intensive business line. In 2012, XPO spent about $60 million on acquisitions. This grew to $500 million in 2013, nearly $1 billion in 2014, and then $7 billion in 2015. The 2015 acquisitions included the $3.5 billion acquisition of Norbert Dentressangle, giving XPO a prominent logistics presence in Western Europe, and the $3 billion acquisition of Conway, cementing XPO's position as an owner of transportation assets, as well as a provider of third-party logistics. Investors became nervous following the acquisition of Conway, viewing the asset-intensive business as lower margin and commoditized. Analysts worried that the heavy debt load and the complex merger integration would weigh on profits and the stock multiple. Additionally, the company has had many sales wins. Through September, sales were up 49% over last year, and XPO's pipeline exceeded $3 billion. The company is focused on growing wallet with existing customers and penetrating high-growth verticals where companies have a need for multiple XPO services. Cross-selling is generating revenues. 90 of the company's top 100 customers use XPO for multiple services, which is up from about 80 a year ago. The company has more than tripled strategic account managers and hired over 200 local account executives. Best-in-class brand, customer service, reach, efficiency, and technology. XPO spends $425 million annually on technology. This pays for 1,600 full-time technology staff. The staff includes over 100 data scientists for predictive pricing and optimization. According to CEO Jacobs, this is the company's secret sauce. All of the company's proprietary technologies integrated on a global cloud-based platform. The company's patented software includes a freight optimizer, a rail optimizer, and a last-mile workflow visibility and customer experience management solution. XPO's warehouses use advanced robotics and drones. CEO Jacobs expects fully automated trucks within the next decade. The company is quickly moving towards centralized procurement. The global procurement team has already achieved an annualized run rate of over $105 million in savings. XPO is using technology to better utilize labor and capacity. And XPO's excellence in these areas has led to growing dominance in many of its business lines. The company is number one in U.S. last mile logistics, number one in North America expedited shipments, number one in Europe outsourced e-fulfillment, the number two contract logistics provider worldwide, number two in North America less than truckload freight, number two global freight broker, and number three intermodal and drayage services provider in the U.S. This slide illustrates the scale and diversity of the business that XPO has built over the last 6 years. The company has over 50,000 customers, 91,000 employees, 1,444 locations. It operates in 32 countries, has over 166 million square feet of contract logistics facilities. It gets 60% of its revenues from the U.S., with the remaining 40% coming from Europe. And retail and e-commerce make up a quarter of its revenues, while food and beverages make up 14% of its revenues, and remaining industries make up less than 10% each. XPO currently has 55 last-mile hubs in North America. which is expected to grow to 85 by the end of 2018. And this year, XPO experienced a 24% e-fulfillment volume spike at its U.S. contract logistics facilities during the period of Black Friday through Cyber Monday. To meet rising demand, XPO hired approximately 6,000 seasonal workers for its contract logistics operations alone, up 20% from 2016. This slide illustrates XPO's revenue by business as well as projected growth rates for those industries. Contract logistics is a $120 billion opportunity, of which XPO has less than 5% market share. The market is growing at 2 to 3 times GDP. The low cyclicality, asset-light business requires little capex and generates strong free cash flow. On average, customers sign 5-year contracts. North America less than truckload is a $35 billion industry, of which XPO has less than 10% market share. The market is growing slightly faster than GDP. The company has the second largest fleet in the U.S. and serves 99% of U.S. zip codes. This business is asset intensive. European transport, including truckload and brokerage, is a $455 billion industry, of which XPO has less than 1% market share. The market is growing slightly faster than GDP. XPO is the largest provider of truck brokerage and has the largest owned fleet in Europe. The company expects less than truckload to generate over $1 billion in EBITDA on a global basis within 5 years. North American truck brokerage, expedite, and forwarding is a $375 billion industry, of which XPO has less than 1% market share. The market is growing at 2 to 4 times GDP. The asset-light business requires little capex and generates strong free cash flow. It also has a high variable cost component, so costs can be taken down quickly should demand falter. In North America, XPO works with over 38,000 carriers who have over 1 million trucks. In expedited, XPO's proprietary transportation management software helps the company ship over 160,000 shipments daily. Intermodal and drayage is a $22 billion industry in North America, of which XPO has less than 5% market share. The market is growing at 3 to 5 times GDP. The asset-light business consists of a network of 2,300 independent operators and access to another 25,000 drayage trucks. XPO's Rail Optimizer software gives it an advantage in pricing and capacity optimization. Last mile logistics is a $13 billion industry in North America, of which XPO has less than 8% market share. The market is growing rapidly at 5 to 6 times GDP. XPO is the largest last mile logistics provider in North America with 55 hubs. Last mile is virtually non-existent in Europe, where XPO is establishing best practices. The asset-light business is growing rapidly due to e-commerce growth of heavy goods shipments. Asset optimization, cost-cutting, efficiency gains, and scale have led to margin expansion. Management believes that they can expand EBITDA margin to 11% with organic revenue growth in the high single digits. Levers available to improve profit margins include global procurement cost savings, automation, better asset utilization, better labor management, rational pricing, culling money-losing business, and expanding higher-margin businesses as a portion of revenue. One reason we find XPO so compelling is the company is able to expand its competitive moat in a vast and growing addressable market. The company has a long runway ahead of it. XPO only has 1.5% market share of the current markets that it operates in. A combination of addressable market growth and rising market share translates into rapid growth. We expect the company to gain market share in its current businesses based on recent business wins and backlog growth, as well as robust cross-selling. Even without expanding into other markets and services, which is unlikely, we believe the company can grow its market cap more than threefold by 2023. XPO is currently seeking an acquisition of up to $8 billion. According to CEO Jacobs, the company could comfortably digest an up to $8 billion acquisition without raising equity. XPO's acquisitions have historically been accretive to EPS. E-commerce is growing at over 20% per year. This secular trend is here to stay and currently accounts for one quarter of XPO's revenues. Contract logistics is a large opportunity in which XPO has technological and real network advantages. Last mile, where XPO is the market leader, is growing rapidly. XPO is introducing last mile best practices to Europe, where the concept is new. XPO is well positioned with cutting edge technology to benefit from Uberization of supply chains. For example, much of truck brokerage could be automated with the right software. While this would not eliminate the need for a sales force, it would increase efficiency, transparency, and rational pricing amongst market participants. XPO is able to provide the best price due to scale and the best service due to excellence. It logically follows that XPO will win more business in a competitive logistics world. Asia Pacific is the world's largest and fastest growing logistics market. XPO is yet to tap into this large opportunity. GIC, Singapore Sovereign Wealth Fund, is one of the largest equity investors in XPO. As the company expands its competitive moat and gains scale, the value of its network grows. In fact, the recent rumor that Home Depot had discussions with XPO regarding a possible acquisition in order to prevent Amazon from potentially acquiring the company sent the stock soaring. As the value of XPO's network becomes more visible over time, the company will likely continue to attract interest from potential suitors. However, we believe the company has a clear path to equity value growth without a buyout. This slide lays out some of the risks to XPO's rapid expansion. Key man risk. Should Bradley Jacobs disappear from the scene, we would have to reevaluate our investment thesis. While there is a deep bench of highly skilled operators at the company, we would need to be reassured that whomever takes over shares a similar ambition for industry domination. Equity and credit markets close. XPO's rapid expansion depends on access to reasonably priced equity and debt financing. Should equity or credit markets take a poor view of the company, expansion via acquisitions could grind to a halt. After multiple large acquisitions in 2015, equity and credit markets soured on XPO due to higher debt levels and the addition of asset-intensive Conway's truckload business. In response, management voluntarily promised to refrain from large acquisitions until the Norbert Dentressangle and Conway acquisitions were fully integrated. Markets could change their view on the company depending on the next large acquisition, although management has more credibility today. An economic slowdown could result in lower shipments. However, XPO's high variable cost component and less cyclical logistics business would cushion revenues and profits. XPO's large customers could become competitors. We believe that almost any company would find it extremely difficult to replicate what XPO has created, particularly at the pace that it has expanded. The level of operational expertise in fast-growing logistics sectors is unmatched. And the leadership skills of CEO Jacobs, including experience with over 500 acquisitions, is also unmatched. XPO could always make the mistake of making a bad acquisition. While a bad small acquisition would likely not impact the business, a bad large acquisition could slow growth and or hurt business. That said, given the track record of strategic acquisitions, price discipline, and problem solving, we would not expect this type of mistake to permanently impair growth. So to summarize, our investment case for XPO Logistics revolves around a vast and expanding addressable market, CEO Bradley Jacobs and a strong management team, best in class at almost everything, declining cost of capital, scale and network effects, and technological superiority, all of which translate into a formidable competitor with an expanding moat in a high growth market. And that's our presentation on XPO. I'd like to open the floor to any questions. Thank you.
Emil, thank you for such an interesting idea and so much unique perspective. If we could please turn back to slide number 9. It's quite clear you did your homework on Bradley Jacobs, and there's obviously quite a bit to learn about him. Could you share any other resources that you found helpful in getting your head around his unique backstory?
A few things that were helpful were annual reports and letters that he's written, even back at United Rentals and at United Waste. Also, one thing that I found extremely helpful, actually just looking at Wikipedia, there's quite a bit written about him. And going through the footnotes and looking up those articles, and then going beyond that and looking at some interviews that he had done, some videos of him that were online. Yeah, so there's no book or anything written about him yet, but there's a lot of he's quite public. He's a very good salesman, so you can find quite a few interviews of him on TV and things like that. So you can get a sense of him. And then listening to all the management calls, he shares quite a bit of information on those. So that's also helpful.
And if we could please jump to slide number 11. I'm noticing the two pie charts on the right with the country breakdown and consumer vertical breakdown. Do you have any perspective or color on how the pie charts might evolve over a 3 to 5 year horizon?
I would think in terms of country breakdown, United States would become a smaller portion of revenues over time, and Europe would probably grow a bit. If they do get involved in Asia Pacific or Latin America, those would be new pies in that pie chart. In terms of customer vertical, I think retail and e-commerce is kind of always going to be the dominant portion of their business, given the contract logistics portion and the e-fulfillment, which is growing very rapidly. I think industrial and manufacturing, they're doing more expedited things or shipments and things like that. So that may grow a little bit, but I think in terms of ranking, maybe home furnishings and furniture would become a little bit bigger due to people becoming more comfortable buying these things online. And then, and last mile growing, because they're also doing installations and other things like that. That had a lot more value. So, but I definitely think retail and e-commerce is going to be the dominant portion of their revenues going forward.
And jumping to slide 12, this is eye-opening and fascinating. I'd love if you could perhaps share some more color on the 3 to 5 times GDP growth or the 5 to 6 times GDP growth. What is driving this excessive return profile, growth profile above GDP?
I guess when GDP grows, trade expands at a higher multiple than GDP generally, and there's a lot of network effect to people getting wealthier. I would say, especially in less developed countries, when you have more expendable income, you would buy more, and especially with countries getting more comfortable with online purchases and things like that. But there's just more to ship, basically. I mean, it's the same in the U.S. I feel like even 5 or 10 years ago, you wouldn't have gone and bought furniture online, but now it's fairly common without even seeing it to have it shipped to your house. And that's kind of where last mile grew from. And in Europe, it's a lot less common, but it's a big opportunity. And XPO is finding people are becoming more comfortable with it. So they're moving what they're doing in last mile in the U.S. and copying it and replicating it in Europe. So I feel like it's just more in terms of the way people shop and the way people think about kind of goods and services. It's like they don't need to see things or pick up things on their own. There's a lot, I guess, a lot more efficient ways to do things nowadays.
And jumping to slide 15, if we could, of the various risks that you've enunciated, which would you say are most on your mind?
I would say that economic slowdown, it's still unclear to me how that would affect the business. I mean, it obviously would affect the business. And management has talked about the variable cost component and things like that. But I'm just curious how much it would slow things down, or maybe it would help them in terms of gaining market share from competitors who aren't as competitive in terms of pricing and things like that. When capacity is, when there's more excess capacity, they might be able to win more business. So it's interesting. I think that's the one that not necessarily worries me the most, but I think that's the most relevant right now. I'm not too worried about overpaying or bad acquisitions because they have a very good track record at that, or Bradley Jacobs in particular over time. And I mean, Human, you never know what's going to happen, but I don't want to worry about that. And then, yeah, the other two, I mean, equity and credit markets could close, but I think if they do close, I don't think they'd only close to XBO. The price of debt and everything would go up to all of their competitors. So it would kind of spread out probably the risk in terms of affecting that business.
Jumping to slide 16, if we could, please. I think you may have touched on this before, but just to clarify, what was going on circa 2015, 2016 that seems to have caused a momentary decline?
In 2015, like in 2014, they made about $1 billion in acquisitions. And then in 2015, they made several large acquisitions, including the purchase of Norbert Dentressangle, and then like just a few months later, the purchase of Conway. And those combined were $6.5 billion, which was far bigger than XPO itself. And the Conway purchase kind of threw people off because it was a asset intensive business. And if you go back to when Bradley Jacobs took over as CEO, he made it sound as if, and I think this was his vision originally, was that it was going to be a truck brokerage business, a less asset intensive business. And then he kind of out of the blue, for some analysts, it was a big shock that he bought Conway, but it was actually a very good deal for them. And so that basically, an asset-intensive logistics company is far, you know, trades at a lower multiple generally than something that's asset-light, and what that would affect, you know, free cash flow and other things, and their ability to pay back debt and things like that. So suddenly, investors got nervous and started, you know, downgrading the stock and selling the stock, which was short-sighted, obviously, in retrospect, but. I think that management has kind of have realized that, you know, they had made investors nervous and basically came out and said that they would not be making any acquisitions until those two big acquisitions were fully integrated. So the last 20 months, they haven't made any large acquisitions. And just two months ago or so, they made it pretty clear that now they're ready, fully integrated, and they're ready to make another big acquisition. And they're constantly looking for the right opportunity, which could be as large as $8 billion at this point.
And if we could turn to the final slide with your contact details or your company logo, please. You've been very generous in sharing your time with us, which we know is quite valuable. What type of feedback would you suggest would be most helpful to receive?
I think in terms of this idea, I would definitely love a contrary opinion if somebody's either short the stock or have a view that is very different than my view, and kind of the challenges, like has a different insight on the challenges that the company faces. I would definitely love to hear that. Also learn a little bit about competitors. I mean, I've looked at some of their competitors, but they're very different type of company than a lot of their competitors. So any insight on the logistics industry would be interesting. And why maybe a competitor is better than them that I haven't, you know, looked at as closely. And it's also like one of my kind of visions for the company is that they would expand into Asia Pacific or Latin America, but especially the Asia Pacific. And I know that logistics market is probably very different and, you know, than the US and Western Europe. So I'm curious if anyone has any extensive knowledge on that. That would be interesting to learn a little bit more about. And in general, I would love to talk to people who share kind of a longer term investment kind of philosophy and, you know, are okay buying undervalued companies and buying companies that are falling in price and not necessarily looking for, you know, a short-term return, and who think more in a contrarian way. It would just be interesting to discuss investment philosophies and anything related to investing, and also the business itself, kind of how to kind of instill those values in your clients so that they understand, you know, how markets work and kind of have the patience to work through difficult times with you. Yeah, I think those would all be helpful to me.
And I believe you are based in New York City. Are you open to having coffee, perhaps, if someone is coming through town?
Oh, yeah, of course. Happy to talk to anyone and definitely have coffee or something when anyone's in town that's interested in learning more.
And I believe your email address will be available on the conference website. I also think you do have a LinkedIn profile. Do you have a preferred communication channel?
Email's fine or LinkedIn's fine. Yeah, and my email address is just my name, amil.bera@advaya.com.
Terrific. On that note, Amil, once again, we are honored to learn from you, and we are very grateful to have you here at Best Ideas 2018. Thank you for sharing your wisdom, and we hope to see you back soon. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.